Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right, because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1, only from Rust-Oleum.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, welcome to our final Edinburgh Rahalastapa, same like you people over there, and just to say, this is the big Edinburgh news. We're sponsoring Next Up's biggest comedy award, which is the biggest in that it's the largest comedy award. But we have provided a life-changing £500 prize for whoever wins that award, mainly as an attempt to... We save some money by not going to Edinburgh, so we're giving someone who's spent too much money in Edinburgh £500. And you can vote for your favourite person. It closes on August the 24th. If you're a Next Up member at nextupcomedy.com/big award. But enough about that. We're not going to mess around today. We have a fantastic guest, a transatlantic guest who will be in Edinburgh at the time of this going out into your ears. He's probably best known as the role of voice in parentheses in The Shivering Truth. It's wonderful. Mike Birbiglia. Hello, Mike. How are you doing?
I know the joke is that it's a ridiculous credit. But that Shivering Truth is actually kind of an amazing series created by Vernon Chapman.
Good.
Who does a lot of he's written a lot on South Park.
Oh sure. My main thing was everyone else had a name and you just had the word
voice. Oh, of course.
Voice in parentheses.
Oh, of course.
I like.
That's a perfect name.
Were you a character or were you just nothing?
I was a character. I played. It's funny. It's a great clip on TikTok. If you ever come across it, I play kind of a very put upon man, not unlike myself, at a grocery store, who keeps saying the wrong thing when they ask paper or plastic, which are the two types of bags they offer, and I say paper, and they explain why I'm wrong. And then I say plastic, and then they explain why I'm wrong about that also. And it's kind of brilliant, actually. But anyway, it's lovely to speak with you.
It's lovely to speak with you. And it was very hard for me to find a credit. There was things that I knew that a British audience wouldn't know, but there was nothing that was bad. If you had to pick your most embarrassing credit, what would you have picked?
Oh my gosh, when I was in college and I was trying to break into acting, I did a lot of these educational videos and it would be like how to change the oil on your car. And it would be, I mean, I don't even know who this was for because they were so juvenile that it's like, I mean, it's as though it's for a 5-year-old, but a 5-year-old can't drive a car. So I don't know who it's for. And it would be these things where It would be, I would be, of course, you know, the guy who does it wrong. Here's the guy who does it right, who's goofus and gallant, you know. Here's the guy who does it right, here's the guy who does it wrong. The guy who does it wrong can't just do it wrong. Like, I had to have, like, oil spurt in my eye.
Okay.
That was the most embarrassing, I think.
That's good. I wish I'd found that, but I didn't find it in my research, so you win. Hey, look, it's fantastic you're back in the UK. You've come over here a lot with your shows, and I know you've got a big UK audience. And I think most people in the UK would actually recognize you because you have acted in a lot of big films and TV series. But you do have quite self-effacing ad for your latest show on Instagram. I think I've seen it, or maybe TikTok, where you say, hey, I'm Mike Birbiglia. You won't know who I am, but I'm coming to the UK.
That's my experience there. When I visit the UK, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's lovely. But it's the people who know what I do generally show up to the shows, and the people who don't, and that's perfectly fine. Although what's interesting is with 6 shows in Edinburgh and 30 performances in the West End, I feel like maybe it changes. I don't know. Honestly, it could.
Yeah,
it really depends. It depends on how it goes.
Yeah, of course. And like a UK audience, I mean, we go all over the world, but a UK audience, and I'm sure the world audience, can catch up on a lot of your, or a good chunk of your specials on Netflix, which I've been watching this week, which I've very much enjoyed. But you have done a good lot of one-man shows, and they are really impressive. I watch them with slight envy because I think you and me are in sort of the same ballpark in what we're doing. Although I think I've shifted maybe more to stand up in some of my shows, and I watched your shows with a bit of envy, thinking maybe I should have stayed with the sort of one man show thing, because they're quite theatrical, right? But they are also they're funny and they are stand up, but you usually have a few theatrical tricks and bits of set and that sort of thing in them.
I think the goal with the shows, my director Seth Barish and I have always worked on this with all of our shows, and again on Netflix, like, people could probably see, I'm trying to think of what's on there, Thank God for Jokes, the new one.
Yeah.
And then possibly My Girlfriend's Boyfriend is somewhere around there. What we try to do is have a series of stories that add up to a single story such that, and it's like I did this show, The Old Man in the Pool, on Broadway, but it finished in January. So I'm re-listening to it and memorizing it again. Yep. And I've actually had this experience of like, oh, I really like that pivot from that topic to the other, because it really is fresh eyes. But then similarly, I'm like, oh, that could be better.
Well, that's good. But, you know, that's part of the experience of putting these shows together. I mean, what I like about watching the Netflix shows was sort of, and I'm sure people get this with my shows as well, I've done like 14 shows over the last 20 years.
Wow.
And obviously you know, you're in different places in your life. And what's very noticeable with your shows is, like, in one, you're going, I'm never getting married. I'm never having kids. I'm never having kids. I'm never going to die. So, you know, it's sort of, each show almost is an answer to the last one, as you do get married and do have kids. I really love, actually, my favorite one was My Girlfriend's Boyfriend. I think.
Thanks.
Because the ending is, I mean, I don't want to wreck it, but the ending is, properly surprising, because you're sort of thinking this will go one way, you know, this has to go one way, and but in almost every way, and it sort of goes differently than you might expect. I'll say that.
I owe a huge credit to that for that ending to a collaboration I did with Ira Glass, who the host and producer of This American Life. He and I were working on that specific story in his office for This American Life, and we sort of came upon it. And he, whenever I say that, he always disclaims it. But the truth is, we came up with that together.
Yeah, but it's terrific. And I also like the title is so great, because you sort of assume it means you.
Yes, yes.
and it doesn't necessarily mean you.
Yes.
But it is. But what I think I like about you, because you're not. There are American comedians who I think, especially to a UK audience's ears, can sometimes be a bit abrasive and that sort of part of the, hey, cancel culture. I hate cancel culture. But you're not that. But equally, you own up to your mistakes and you tell stories against yourself and you tell stories that I think don't. There's a story about you visiting a prostitute in Amsterdam in one of the shows, which I think most comedians like you might not tell because it sort of a little bit goes against the image.
Not only would they not tell, but many people in my life told me not to tell.
it's great that you tell, because it's important to the show, and I know, and you can see that you're uncomfortable in doing it, but that's. You know, I think that both in that and in my girlfriend's boyfriend, it's sort of so open, I don't know. I really love the message of it of the necessity not to be right anymore and the change it is in you. So it's, you know, it's that's my favorite one. But
thank you so much. I think I like to walk around in my imperfections and sort of dig deep into them. And yeah. I've had trouble recently because they've all gone away and I've fixed myself. And so I just have nothing to talk about anymore.
Well, it's a little bit the same for me. I think our current show, the show you're doing and the show I'm working on are sort of very much in the same area by the sounds of it. I haven't seen The Old Man in the Pool, obviously, because it's not out yet. And I haven't had a chance to see it, but I hope I will. Well, I'm sort of in two minds because I'm working on a show about an illness I had. And it sounds like this is what your
Old Man
in the Pool is about. So I had testicular cancer 2 years ago.
Oh, no kidding. Wow.
Yeah, so there's a lot of crossovers because you talk about in your show about having the operation to have your...
I had the varicocele repair, but also I had bladder cancer when I was 20.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So it sounds like we're in a similar area. Not that that's necessarily a problem, but it does when you hear about something like that, it makes me think, oh, I really want to see this show and it's coming to London, but as a comedian, do I want to come and see it in case, you know, it's somehow it pollutes my show or there's a crossover with my show, you know, so that's a difficult thing. But tell us about this show anyway.
Well, this show is like you're saying, I start off the show at a doctor's appointment where I fail the pulmonary test. I think that you call it that as well. It's where you blow into a tube to test your lung capacity. And the doctor said, if I was just going by this result, what's on the screen, I would say you're having a heart attack right now. And I said, am I having a heart attack? Because if I thought I was, I would come here and I would tell you. And so she sent me to a cardiologist and a series of the show spirals into a series of doctor's appointments, which land me at the YMCA pool, which, as I understand it, in the UK is the equivalent of kind of the leisure center, which is one of the things, basically a pool that has way too much chlorine. There's a line in it where I say they're like, I don't know what the hell kind of heinous crime they're covering up at that YMCA pool, but I think something went down. Like there was a mob hit in the middle of the night. A bunch of goons were like, do we dig a ditch? Do we bring the body down to the YMCA pool? I got a family membership. We use a guest pass for the corpse. We drop it in the pool. It disintegrates within 6 hours. It's a lot of chlorine, but I talk a lot about kind of getting healthy, swimming, doing all these things that I really never thought I would do in my life, that I swore when I was a kid, I'm never going back to the YMCA pool, and here I am. Yeah. So, of course, similar. There's a parallel, of course, to what you were saying earlier with the mayor. Yes. I'm never going to get married. I'm never going to have a child. I'm never going to go to the YMCA pool. And I find that that's definitely a recurring theme in my life. I'm never going to do blank is always followed by cut to blank.
Yeah. But I think that's part of the process that everyone goes through. I think that they're very relatable, I think, these shows to most people.
Oh, yeah.
Even though a lot of the things are very specific to you, which is always good. But yeah, I mean, I think it is interesting as a comedian who's worked, but we've both worked for a long time. We've both done a lot of shows. And yeah, if you reach a sense of balance and personal happiness, then you have to find stuff elsewhere. But it does feel like you do have quite a lot of health issues. You look pretty healthy, but you have a lot of issues. So you've done a show and a routine about your sleepwalking, which nearly killed you.
Yeah, that's correct. I jumped I jumped through a second story window in my sleep, and I've lived to tell the tale, which is why it's funny. If I had died, it would have been a tragedy, but I lived, so it's a comedy.
I mean, it is, but as a comedian, I mean, I know when I've got the one point I did in the whole of the story of my testicular cancer that I didn't think, oh, great, I can do a show about this, is when I got the phone call that sort of, heavily implied I was having cancer and thought I might die. For a second, I didn't think this will be a great show, but all the way through the rest of it, I was thinking, but if you're coming up with that stuff, I mean, you're doing it in your sleep. If you're walking, you can't even be thinking this will be great for a show because you're not even awake. I was interested in the, so you went, when you, to save yourself, when you go to bed, you're sort of in a sleeping bag wearing mittens.
Yeah, I zip myself up in a sleeping bag up to my neck, and there I wear mittens so I can't open the sleeping bag.
Yeah.
And I take medication, which drives me nuts. I take like clonazepam, which I've been taking this medication for 15 years, and it was only, I only looked at the side effects like last week.
Right.
And it was like depression, poor motor skills, and, trying to think of what the other one was. And I was just like, oh, I thought that was just my personality. It's like that moment in your life where you realize that your personality is side effects.
Yeah. Is it, I wondered just what, because I was offered, I snore and I grind my teeth, and I was offered like a mouth guard. And I kind of thought, oh yeah, but I mean, that's, at what point do you put that in? And it's not sexy if you're hoping to have sex.
Yeah.
With your partner,
yeah,
that's not sexy.
Yeah.
At what point do you put on the sleeping bag and the mittens? If you because
it's if you're still, by the way, if you're still holding out for sexy, I'm gonna break some news to you.
Yeah.
No, there's some other factors. No, it's my director Seth and I always go back to this. There's an old saying, which is we're only as sick as our secrets. And I always think, like, if you're not telling secrets on stage, then you're not giving the audience what they need.
Sure. Okay.
That's how I view it. I don't know. I mean, I always enjoy it when I see a comedian say something where I know they're not so comfortable talking about it. The other thing that I find is I have an extraordinary amount of people come up to me and say, I struggle from this type of cancer. I've had this kind of sleepwalking disorder. I have this kind of, I lost my dad, last year. The amount of people who relate to when you tell a personal story that you're uncomfortable telling, the amount of people who come up to you and relate to you in a parallel way versus a one-to-one way is so many that it actually makes the whole thing worth it. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes you do feel like, I don't know about you, but I travel a lot. And sometimes with the amount of airplanes and rental cars and driving all over the place and, playing some gigs that are not as fun as others, sometimes you go, what's it worth, But you do encounter, I feel like if you open up to audiences, you do encounter people who really need it. And that's who it's for.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And exactly the routines that I've thought, oh, I can't do that, and that I've backed away from doing for fear, I guess, are very much like, very much like your prostitute experience. You kind of, those are the ones that A, stick in the mind, and B, do absolutely go the best. I guess it's because of that, because the audience know you're putting yourself in an excruciating. I mean, a different comedian would tell that story, and it wouldn't be excruciating. They'd be going, hey, I went to Amsterdam and visited a prostitute.
For sure.
And you were going, you horrible man. But you are excruciated and embarrassed by yourself. And it's a very important part of the show. So, it's endlessly fascinating. Really,
oh, thanks.
That element of comedy. Well, let's say, before I forget and make sure we get it in, that The Old Man in the Pool is on. You're on at the Underbelly, right, in Edinburgh?
Yeah, I'll tell you exactly where it is. It's a fancy kind of like castle-looking place
that I've
never been to before. Underbelly Bristow Square.
Okay,
which is It looks, I mean, have you been there? It looks gorgeous.
I'm not sure because the underbelly has moved around, done lots of different things, and I haven't been up this year, so I'm not sure. It might be the old Gilded Balloon building.
I think so.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I mean, it's Bristow Square is a great place to be. You've done Edinburgh a few times, right?
No. It's my debut.
Oh, is it? Wow. Okay. Yeah.
It's my Edinburgh debut. Yeah. I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled because I, for years, people have said to me that I'm an Edinburgh act, and yet I've never been there. So I'm thrilled. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the Bristow Square is a brilliant place to be. That's right now the basically the central hub of the whole thing. So yes, you will definitely have fun there. And then when it comes
McEwen Hall.
Okay. Oh yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's what it is.
I know it is. Yeah. And whereabouts is the show? If people were to come see it, it's only in London, right? You're only doing London.
In London, it's at the Wyndham's Theatre.
Great.
Which is in the West End. And it's gorgeous. Oh my gosh, spectacular! I actually met a comedian this weekend, John Bishop in New York.
Oh yes.
And I had never met him before, but apparently he's a massive comedian, and he was at the Comedy Cellar in New York, which is my like home club here in Brooklyn. Yeah. And I watched him, and I just thought he was an absolute riot. I just thought, this guy's fantastic.
He is good. He's done very well.
He does this sign language piece, right. which I thought was beautiful. I mean, like, truly, I was saying to him, I love watching you because I think that in Europe, that like long form, which is what I do, long form storytelling and comedy, I think has caught on more than it has in America. I think in America, for sure, it's a bit more set up, punch, tag. And it's and there it just seems like he really took his time. And I really just loved watching him.
Yeah, it's great. I'm glad because he's become quite a big TV, a big TV star and presenter and, you know, that sort of thing. So it's and he does an interview. He does an interview show. But it's great to see him back doing stand up because he was sort of, I mean, it was probably 20 years ago he first came to Edinburgh. But it was like a breath of fresh air because he's in the UK, you're right that the sort of storytelling and the hour long or 90 minute long thing is much more prevalent, I guess, than in the States. But but he did, you know, he sort of broke through very fast and got successful very quickly. So I'm glad he's doing stand up again. I don't know him very well, but I've met him a couple of times. He is a very nice guy. Let's talk a little bit about some of your acting, which is again, very impressive CV when it comes to acting, and where people might have seen you. And I think I don't think I made the connection for this between it being you, but you're in Orange Is the New Black, which with a character that I really loved, and I didn't realize it was. I mean, I did. I think I maybe wasn't aware as aware of your comedy when that came out, but I was surprised to see that credit, and then I went, oh yeah, he's that guy.
He's that guy. I have a lot of. I play Danny Pearson, who is sort of like a corporate prison executive on Orange Is the New Black for a few seasons, and I just loved it. I just loved working with those folks and with Genji who created the show and I got to work, you know, with TV often. Like in that case, it was like different directors almost every episode. And so I got to work with Nicole Holofcener and all kinds of really cool film directors. And I loved it.
Yeah. I'd like to thank you for your appearance in Annie, which was our kids' lockdown film that we watched.
Oh my gosh.
A lot of times, but I was delighted to see you pop up in Annie as a sort of government official, I suppose, coming to check out.
I'm a lot of this interview is making me realize how many government officials I play.
But you're working with Cameron Diaz, and that's the other thing you notice from watching your TikToks and your Instagram is that a lot of celebrities come to your show. So Tom Hanks has been recently because you've been in a film with Tom Hanks.
Yeah, I was in A Man Called Otto with Tom Hanks and another government official coming over, real estate agent guy. Yeah, yeah. I'm always, I think people like to cast me as that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. But then that's it. You know, it's not usual that Tom Hanks would be in a film and, you know, he's in a lot of films with lots of actors. It's not that usual that he would sort of befriend to the extent of coming to see their one-man shows, is it?
It was really nice. I mean, that we had the show at Lincoln Center for 12 weeks, and it was honestly just completely thrilling. The people who came through, sometimes people tell me I look a little bit, I have a resemblance to Paul Rudd, and one night he came and we took a photo where I'm looking in the mirror, and then it was a trick shot where we photoshopped it to look like I'm looking in the mirror, and it is Paul Rudd. And I feel lucky all those folks came. It was Steve Martin came, which was always sort of a dream.
Yeah, it's incredible. Do you? I mean, again, I don't want to be insulting because you are, you know, you've worked for a long time.
I feel an insult coming up.
It's not good. I don't think it is going to be insulting.
No, I feel like
it's just because you seem so like a regular guy. Like, I recognize you as a regular comic, and you know, I kind of feel like, oh, I have some parallels with this guy. If I was in a film with Cameron Diaz or Tom Hanks, I'd lose my fucking mind. is your acting career at the point where you think, well, this is normal, does it throw you?
I mean, that was exciting. That was really exciting. I mean, that's like childhood dream stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, I grew up watching the movie Big. And, you know, really like all of Tom Hanks's movies. And I think it did not. And also my first scene on set of A Man Called Otto with Tom, I was so nervous that they had me driving my real estate agent car around this corner. And then I have to sort of speed up and then stop abruptly because Tom's character hits the car. And then Mark Forster was a director, and he has the camera operator pulling in on a crane. It's like a crane aerial shot coming in to catch my first line. And this whole thing is choreographed, and it comes in, and I am sky high with my lines. I have nothing. And Tom says his line, and then I'm just silent. And then Tom starts to lead me through what my line is not saying it, but saying things like, how do you feel about me? You know what I mean? Like, and I still couldn't get it. And then they called cut. But it was just one of those things where I was like, not only am I messing this up, but I'm forcing Tom Hanks to be kind of a wildly generous scene partner, way above and beyond. So, but we did get it, and you know, that first take was brutal. It was just, I couldn't have felt more awful.
But that's, you know, that's good to hear, because I think that shows, you know, I've done a bit of acting, but I can't imagine what it's like acting in something of that scale and with people like that. And it's good to know that people fuck things up.
I'm nervous about everything all the time. I'm nervous about coming to Edinburgh next week.
Yeah.
Like,
don't be nervous about that.
But I am. But I, you know, I have had this realization really recently that I dread everything that I do. Like, I'll dread, like, I'll take the subway somewhere, and I'll go, oh, I got to do this show, and then I'll get on the subway, and I'll go, oh, I like the subway, you know, and then I'll get to the show, and I'll be like, oh, I got to perform for these people, and then I look at them, and I'm like, oh, I like these people, they want to have a good time, they want to laugh, and I think in some ways that's what death is like. It's like we dread our death our whole lives. And then one day I'm going to die, and I'm going to be like, this is nice. No one's mad at me. You know what I mean?
I think you're right.
But it's all equivalent to me. Like, honestly, like, I'm nervous about, like, most things in advance.
Okay, so that's good to know. That's good to know you're nervous about everything.
tell
me about – I've seen you in a Taylor Swift video, and I can't – you're playing Taylor Swift. Son,
yeah, in the future, in like a dystopian future, and I have a wild kind of wig on, and I'm, it was a blast,
How did that? I mean, A, was there any feeling that you might end up dating Taylor Swift at being in a video? Because that's always a possibility.
I don't think so, no. That was, of the million possibilities, does not crack the top million.
It could have been. I mean, if she was playing your mum, it would have been weird, but that's okay. How did it come about? That is she a fan of yours, or are you a fan of hers?
I think that we met through a musician, close friend of mine, Jack Antonoff, who she collaborates with a lot and has his own band that's called Bleachers. That's amazing. And we met at a thing, and she just so happened to be writing the song Antihero, and that day.
Right.
And she was writing the video for it at the same time. And
right.
And then I had no idea, but in her mind, it kind of clicked that it would be funny if this guy played that part.
Okay.
And then a few months later, I got a text message from her that said, "Hey, it's Taylor, and would you want to do this?" And it was this whole script. She wrote the whole script for the video, and I'm directing it, and she said, "I'm directing it," and all that stuff. And I just said, "Sign me up," you know? And then, I showed up a few months later, and it's probably more people have seen that than anything I've ever done in my whole life, is me in a wig playing Taylor's son.
It's good. It's a bit like the Thriller video because the music stops and we get a little scene.
Yes.
I like that.
Yeah. and it was a fun set. I mean, it was wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, good. Right. I'm going to ask you some of my emergency questions and see how we get on with that. Because you come from an improvisational background.
Please.
I'm sure you're going to be fine about this. If you could go into a chrysalis and dissolve like a caterpillar does, but you can come out of the chrysalis as anything you would like to be, how would you emerge from the chrysalis? What would you be, and who would you be, or what would you change?
This is a great question.
Thank you.
That's a stalling tactic.
I know. I get it. It is also a great question, though. So,
if I could emerge as anything, I think maybe a cat. I mean, I have two cats, Precious and Mr. Mustache, and I feel like I really enjoy watching them all day, and I do feel like I really would enjoy I in Harry Potter, I want to say the professor turns into a cat a handful of times, and I just think it's a nice, it seems like a fun ride.
Yeah, I think that's right. How did Mr. Mustache get his name or her name?
You'd have to see Mr. Mustache, and then you would not ask this question.
Well, it's Mr. Mustache. It might have a mustache, but the formality of Mr. I like the formality of Mr. Mustache.
Yeah, Mr. Mustache, and my daughter Una is 8 years old, and I think she named Precious Mr. Mustache.
Yeah, and our kids did the same with our cats. One of them's a tabby cat that they call Chocolate, and the other one's a ginger cat that they call Tabby. So,
aww. Well, if you recommend, let me know if you recommend any kids shows in Edinburgh, because I'm bringing Una. My wife Jenny and I are bringing Una to Edinburgh, and everybody just tells me the kids shows are incredible.
They are great. Mr. Bubble Man, or the man who does the massive bubbles, is always fantastic. And
is that right?
Yeah, but he's hard. But the Bubble Man or Bubble Man. My kids and wife have been in Edinburgh. The show they talked about the most, I'm not sure it's the best show or best show for a parent to take the kids to, is 101 Ways to Annoy Your Parents.
101 Ways to Annoy Your Parents.
So I picked them up from the station and they tried some of it and they were going, instead of saying, "Oh, we're nearly there," they were saying, we're not there yet. So there was no way of getting out of that. And it has lots of bogeys in it and stuff.
101 ways to annoy your parents.
And
Bubble Man. And then I think Una just read Harry Potter last week for the first time. So it's a great synchronicity with coming to Scotland.
Yes.
Because at very least, we can see the castle that's the exterior in the movie for Hogwarts.
Yes, you can. Well, you really. And Edinburgh is an amazing place for that. There's a thing you can go. I think it's called St. Mary's Walk, but it's the underground old city underneath the Royal Mile, where you can go and visit they built on top of the old houses, so you can go and look inside medieval houses, which is very.
Wait, can you say that, the name of that again, so I can write that down?
You'll find it. I think it's called St. Mary's. I mean, I can probably Google it to get it right.
I'm just going to write houses under city.
Yeah, you'll definitely find
I'll figure that out. Mary's house is under city.
It's really
which
good.
Which has been renamed by Richard Herring.
And there's a book written by David Wollstonecraft called The Magic Hour, which sort of, I think, is influenced by that city, which I would also recommend if you're...
Oh, wow. The Magic Hour.
If your daughter likes Harry Potter, I think she would like that as well.
Oh, nice.
Good.
But yeah, it is this all down.
It is, you know, I found the difficulty going to Edinburgh with a family and doing shows is because I was doing an afternoon show as well. So I missed out on going with a lot of the kids' shows, but you're so tired, you know, you've either got to look after your kids or you're so tired that it's difficult to get out and see too much. But yeah, I mean, there's obviously so much to see. You're going to be turning up just as everyone is knackered and angry and depressed. So good luck.
Thank you. I don't know if that's an encouraging thing to say.
The other performers, the audiences should be okay. The audiences should be okay. But the other performers will be husks. I haven't gone up this year because I found it. I only did 10 days last year and I found it just because I've done it. Like 25 times or something like that, 26 times.
Oh my gosh.
So I just, but it, I found it too wearing and depressing, but also just the pressure of all that. It's the same thing as having all your shows and seeing your life, but you go to a place that you've been to once a year for 25 years or over 30 years, and just every street corner has a story. I kind of felt this sort of, I felt like a fossil being pushed down by the layers of my own life.
Wow.
Does somebody
have a pen?
So this is your first time, so you'll be fine. If you come back for the next 30 years, then you'll be crushed.
That sounds like Mary's house is under the city in your soul.
It could be. But you'll have a fantastic time there, I think that
makes up for it at the end. But I'm sure you'll have a fantastic time. That's what I love. I love having an interview with a comedian as opposed to like a talk show host, because you're just like, oh, everyone's going to be exhausted and no one's going to want to be there. But I'm sure you'll be fine.
Everyone will hate you because you'll turn up all fresh faced and excited. Yeah. They'll go, fuck off, Mike.
Yeah,
we haven't got nominated for any awards.
Oh my gosh.
I think I always used to do the full run. And I actually think just doing a few days is absolutely the way to do it. It's sort of, when you're a young man, I think performer, it's a good thing to be forced to do something 30 times.
Yeah.
But I think you're doing it exactly right, I would say. Although maybe the middle week would have been better than the end.
I was excited until this interview.
Well, I want you to go feeling as unflat, and then you can only go up. I know you're worried about going already, so I'm gonna help you with that.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad. And I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
I'm going to ask you another emergency question. Do you have school sports days in? Do you have like the equivalent of a sports day in America at school where you?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
How were you at school in sports days? What are your memories of school sports days?
So, I have a story in the show about how in high school I made the mistake, 10th grade. I made the mistake of joining the wrestling team.
Okay.
And I say, which was a huge mistake, my teammates explained to me, because you can't blend in wrestling practice. You know, I played football when I was younger, and you can blend in football practice. People be like, there's Mike. No, Mike's in the woods. You know what I mean? But in wrestling practice, you can't blend in. And I'll tell you one detail about wrestling practice, which is they paired me up with someone of my own ability. And I was in the 152-pound weight class. Based on ability, they paired me up with our 102-pound wrestler.
Okay.
And I said, I don't know if you've seen a 102-pound person, but these are smaller people. It was a little bit like wrestling your own baby. And this magical baby would pin me multiple times per practice. It was like watching a paperweight be pinned by paper. And it was, I hated everything about it. It was really, truly like my least favorite thing in my whole life.
Good. I'm sorry to have brought that up, but you know, clearly, in comedy terms, again, I mean, that's, you know, you do, you know, you mine your childhood in terms of the makeout club and makeout club as well, which again is a very relatable thing. I mean, weirdly, I think those things tend to be relatable for nearly everyone. Everyone sort of feels they're the bad sports person or the person who was the last one to make out. So even though that can't possibly be true. I think it's still, it's weird that sort of will, most people will chime. There'll be someone going, no, I was snogging people when I was 12 and, you know, but most people go, yeah, I was the last one. I feel like I was the last one to kiss anyone.
Yeah. No, I think I feel that's another one that when I tell that story, people come up to me and say, I was the last person. Yeah.
Yeah. But they can't all have been, can they? So
yes, exactly.
We it's interesting about how we perceive ourselves and. Yeah, but yeah, that's good. One more emergency question is if all the art galleries and museums in the world got together and said, we love Mike Birbiglia's comedy, we want to give you one thing that you can keep from any museum or any art gallery, is there an object or a piece of art or a piece of history that you would like to possess?
To own, to keep?
Yeah, to keep forever.
Wow. I feel like some kind of famous bed or couch.
Yeah.
Because I just believe in functional art.
Yeah.
I don't believe in this idea that it would be even such a big deal to have a Picasso on your wall. I just feel like if someone made a really spectacular couch, I would purchase that.
Okay, that's good. Would you like an historical one, or would just like a good functional?
I think a historical couch one would be great. Something in the royal realm, you know, something that has something in the, you know, from the one of the Scottish castles. I mean, I'm all for any kind of historic furniture. That's what I would do. Yeah,
a lot of those beds don't look comfortable though. I mean, you might need to.
No, it's true. I would do kind of a sleep number conversion on it.
Okay. good answer.
I put some kind of memory foam on the historic frame.
I think you could do that. So do you know what your next show is going to be? Are you working on your next show?
I do. You know, it's funny. It's funny you should mention that the making out when you're a kid or when you're younger, because the current title, the work in progress title for the next show is Please Stop the Ride, in reference to being on the Scrambler.
Yeah.
Which is it called the Scrambler in the UK? Those rides where you're spinning in a circle, which is inside of another circle, and
they're sort. Well, I think they might be the waltzers. They might be called in the UK, but I'm not sure. They might be.
Yeah. So when I was a kid, I went on that, and I had dreams of being at the carnival and having my first kiss and all this kind of stuff. And then I remember just being on this ride and feeling like, oh, I'm going to throw up for sure, and I don't know what to do. And every time the ride would circle around to be near the scrambler operator, I would say, please stop the ride. And then I would be back, and I would be spinning and spinning and spinning. And the older I get, the more I realize that this story I've been telling for years and been thinking about for years of telling the operator to please stop the ride feels so like so many things in my life. And I feel like in so many ways we're on a ride and there's not much we can do about it. And we have to just enjoy the ride. And that's sort of the basis of what I've been talking about lately. I've been talking about my relationship with my daughter and my wife and my childhood and kind of ping-ponging back and forth between time elapses of memories from my childhood and now raising my daughter and kind of like ruminating on what I can teach her. And I think it's nothing.
I mean, I think it's interesting is that when comedians, you get this certain type of comedy fan that when comedians who were, especially ones who were sort of avowedly single, which I mean, I'm like you in that I was single. I think I would have liked to have been in a family and been married, but I wasn't for a long time. But they get annoyed when that comedian has kids and then starts doing material about their kids. But it would be a crazy. I mean, if you're following someone and their observations, it's sort of crazy to me that you don't then go, oh, well, I haven't made that choice, but this is their choice, and I'm interested in seeing their life. Have you found any pushback from fans on you talking about your family? I bet not, but
I spend a lot of time, and this is part of the reason I love that I'm coming to Scotland. I came to Leicester Square last year. I like performing. I perform at a lot of universities here. Yeah. I like performing for as many different types of audiences as possible, to know how well a bit can go and how poorly a bit can go. Because it teaches you so much about what's funny about what you're talking about to other people. So, like, for example, if people watch my special, which is called The New One on Netflix, it's all about how I never wanted to have a child and all the reasons why I never wanted to have a child, and then about how I had a child and how I was right and then how I was wrong. And that's sort of how it becomes emotional at the end. And I had this thing when I was developing that show where it was killing in clubs and for my audiences. And then I performed at Princeton University here. And it didn't, I wouldn't say it bombed, if I'm being honest, but it definitely didn't. It was like a 6, you know what I mean? It was like, this is not what it's been. Yeah. And I really looked within, and I ended up coming up with, and if people watch the special, they'll understand what I mean. I ended up coming up with this couch metaphor. Like, your whole life, the first time you get a couch or a sofa, you just find it on the street, and then one day you're like, maybe I could buy a sofa, you know, and then you do, and it, you're like, that's how much it costs, and it becomes this metaphor for like. For essentially, like, in some ways, like domesticity and growing up and aging into different things. And then what I found was that when I went back to universities and I opened with this couch metaphor, that the sofa metaphor, that people would be on the same page with me. And that it was and then I talked about having kids, and then they sort of got it. Like, they got that we were on the same page. And I feel like if you start with something that you all have in common, you and the audience have in common, they're willing to go somewhere else. But if you open with, so the other day my daughter did this, it's sort of like, well, I don't have a child. I don't really know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. And, you know, your shows are very, the sets and things are quite complex. So the set for The Old Man in the Pool is a wave. I believe you considered having an actual swimming pool in the
theater.
Which again, but when you come to tour something like that, because I'll do my shows for one night and take them somewhere else, so the idea of you obviously do a residency somewhere, but when you're touring something, is that a pain in the ass, or do you, how How are you translating that set when you come to the UK?
So, like, a majority of the time, I'm performing with no set. Like, in Edinburgh, right. There will be no set.
Yeah.
But in the West End, like, there's 30 performances, and so they're building it. You know, the set was designed by Beowulf Barrett, and the lighting was Aaron Kopp, and a really wonderful team of people who created the design. Sure. And so we will bring the Wyndham Theater will have the full designed set. And yeah, I love performing on a set because it's like that thing that they say about when you give an actor a pair of shoes, all of a sudden they're inhabiting the character that of the shoe. You know what I mean? And I feel like the set design is like that. Like it's this kind of swimming pool aesthetic. It's kind of a tile aesthetic, and it kind of transports me back to my childhood at the YMCA pool, which is a lot of what the show's about.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think those details, they do sort of transform. I can completely see all of these shows working without any of this because the material's great, but it does, you know, it does, if you're going to the theatre, often, you know, if you're coming to see me, often it will just be me standing on the stage. And so it does make it feel like, and your tickets, I noticed, for London, are not that expensive, which is terrific. They're like about £25, which is good. I think that's a good fair price. But at least, you know, you're going to a theatre and some effort has been made. I think the theatricality and the use, and you know, you've clearly got a big team of people that you work with to achieve this. But it does sort of elevate it, I think, to another level.
That's the subtitle of the show, is some effort has been made,
right? But it's, you know, it's very interesting to me. You know, I'm glad to have, I've always been aware of you, and I've seen bits and pieces of you, and I follow you on social media, so I've seen lots of clips. But it's been really great and pretty inspiring, actually, to watch
nice.
To watch those shows and think about, to think about what I've done differently. Because I started out and I did stand up and I didn't like it. And then I came back, I did a double act, and then I came back to one man shows, which were stories, but not really stand up. And then I pivoted a bit more back to stand up again after that. But so it's kind of interesting to look back and think, I wonder if I'd stayed with what I was doing and not gone back to stand up, how things were doing. But yeah, it's, I did a show called Christ and a Bike, which was all about my relationship with Jesus, which I think, again, you know, we touched on a lot of the big themes, both of us, so there are similarities. But someone from America came to see it. I just thought, I was thinking about this today, because someone from America came to see it. It was 2001, and someone came and said, we must put this on in New York. We're going to put this in off Broadway in New York. And I was very excited. And then 9/11 happened. And they didn't want to do a show about religion.
Oh, wow.
So I feel I'm more probably the main victim of 9/11, really. Cause,
yeah, you know, and I think it's possible the terrorists heard about the show.
Yeah, I think that's it. I thought, how can we ruin this about a guy doing religion? So, yeah, so I missed that opportunity to play off-Broadway. So, you know, have a think about that, New York.
Someday, Christ on a Bike.
Someday it'll come back. But, yeah, it's, you know, it is... when you were, I mean, we'll wrap up soon, and this is mainly for myself. At what point did you realize, because you feel like a stand-up comedian to me, you know, there's some people who are actors who do stand-up comedy. You're obviously new both. It feels to me, looking at you, you're a stand-up comedian who also happens to be a terrific actor and has done acting.
Oh, thanks.
But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you're an actor who did stand-up comedy. But at what point did you sort of realize that you wanted to go that, because it get, like you say, it's unusual for an American act to not just do the clubs and then do maybe a special of basically unconnected material. Can you remember what pushed you towards this type of show?
Well, I had wanted to write comedy since I was in in ninth or 10th grade, and I would write the satire issues of the school newspaper. I wrote for the school newspaper in earnest, and I would write parody issues sometimes. My brother Joe did that too, and he was older than me, and he sort of taught me how to do that. And so when I got to my university, I I said, is there a sketch comedy group here? Because I'd like to write for them. And they said, no, but there's an improv group. You could audition for that. And I did. And I got in. And then I couldn't believe how funny these people were. I just thought, oh, these are the funniest 10 people I've ever met in my whole life. And I felt like it was like home. And I just felt, and they're still some of my best friends today. And I kept going towards performing and writing comedy, and I was studying screenwriting and playwriting in at my university. And so I merged the two things, the playwriting and stand-up comedy, and into what it is I do now. And so that it really is, it was honestly just going, it was going towards my passion and obsession over and over again until it was worth anyone's time to watch it.
Cool. It's really interesting. And if people in the UK haven't seen your stuff, I really do recommend you seek this stuff out and do come and go and see either in Edinburgh or London, The Old Man and the Pool.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure, you know, has had fantastic reviews. It feels like it's your, you know, all your shows seem to be critically acclaimed, but this one seems to have even gone up another notch. I don't know if that's fair to say in terms of the reaction.
You know, my director said that, Seth said that recently. He goes, I think it's the best reviewed of the bunch. It's my fifth one.
Yeah.
And it hadn't occurred to me, but I think it may be. I think it's possible.
Yeah. Well, it's good. You always want to feel that when you're doing a show. I think it's very hard, but I think it's not always great to see reviews, obviously. But
no,
I think
no.
When you get an idea, you know, that of how it's going down, and you'll be getting that from audiences. And as you say, this seems to be a show that touches audiences in a way, because, you know, it's talking about disease and death and illness, and these are things that touch everyone. Right?
And it's worth pointing out that it's age, you know, it's not age specific. You know, it's one of those shows that, like, I've seen 12-year-olds in the crowd, right, who love it. I've seen 100-year-olds in the crowd who love it, and it's intended that way. I mean, I really go out of my way to kind of pull out cultural references and really, like, you know, anything that won't relate to people. And so I don't know. I'm very proud of it. I hope people like it in Edinburgh.
And I know, you know, it's the thing that I like about most comedians will do this in some degree, but it's obviously turning bad news and unpleasant things into things that we can, and frightening things into things that we can laugh about. And it's a very funny show from all accounts. So I think I'm going to come and see it, Mike. The only reason I wouldn't come to see it is I just don't want to pollute my own show by realizing it's not as good as yours.
But this is called retail ticket selling. It's taken 1 hour to convince Richard to come to my show.
I'll probably come with someone else. That's two tickets. That's 50 quid in your pocket.
Oh my gosh.
And, you know, we've got to take some expenses off.
Also, if Bubble Man is playing at the same time, don't feel like you have to come.
Okay, then I won't come. I think he's in the afternoon. You'll be fine. It's a real honor and a real pleasure to talk with you, Mike. So thank you
for
too,
giving Richard.
Us so much time. And hopefully come and see the show, and hopefully see you down the line somewhere. It'd be lovely to do one of these live as well.
If our
schedules ever cross over. But
I would love that.
Cheers, man. Really
right.
Enjoys it. Thank you very much. Thanks,
Richard. All
Thank
right.
you. Bye-bye. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Mike Birbiglia. Thank you very much to Scant Regard for this beautiful music. I'm indebted to my friend and producer and director, Chris Evans. Not that one, or that one, or that one, or that one. Thank you also to the wonderful Mabel. Thank you very much. They were lovely. What a much more professional than our setup. Thank you also to everyone at Zencaster for your fine work in giving us stuff to do. This is a Sky Potato Buzz and Go Faster Stripe.com production. It's the last one from Edinburgh. We'll be back to regular Rahulastapas from next week. And we're on tour. RichardHerring.com/Rahulastapa. Come and see us. Goodbye.
Smart.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks for listening. richardherring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.